Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I sit down with a couple of UK pastors, Graham Nichols and Mark Bentham. Well, we're getting a little bit political today on the podcast as we reflect on this week's presidential debates in the USA, how they went, whether it was in any sense useful to watch, and the difficult decision facing Christian voters across the pond at the moment. And then in the main bit this week, we chat about conspiracy theories. Sometimes they're a bit of fun, something entertaining to chat about with your mates, but other times these theories hold more water, and perhaps we begin to take a minority or controversial view on something, or we're in contact with somebody else who is doing that. So how do we engage with conspiracy theories as believers? This is the question for today. So enjoy, and I'll catch you on the other side.
Three, two, one. I'm Mark Bentham.
And I'm Graham Nichols.
And I'm Josh Bannister, and you're listening to Ordinary. Do you know what? I might include your little 3-2-1 there, Mark, because it just amused me so much.
Brought a little chuckle to your face.
Aren't you supposed to not say the one part, though?
Yeah.
Oh, well. You know, I'm just learning.
You're supposed to just put one finger up. You know, 3-2, and then silent one.
Okay.
Why is that? So that it doesn't accidentally bleed over onto the on-air cut?
Yeah. Well, okay. It's a kind of good habit to get into for when we start to broadcast these actually sort of live on terrestrial television.
Oh, television. Exciting.
I think at that point we won't be counting in, but let's not worry about that.
That's true.
It's like a Sunday morning. That's what happens now on Sunday. We get these counts from the back. They tell us when the camera goes live.
And it's exciting to be in the building because you get the behind-the-scenes glimpse. You know, you get all the, are we ready? We're not quite ready. Are we ready? And then it starts. But on the TV at home, it's seamless. Absolutely seamless.
Yeah, cool. The joys. Things you never thought you'd have to think about as a pastor.
Absolutely.
Sunday roundup short. Did the sermon pass real slow? Did you plant some seed to grow? It's roundup time. What do you know?
Can we have a quick summary of the teaching from Sunday? Do you want to start with the morning, Mark, considering you preached on Sunday morning?
Yeah, so in the morning we were continuing our studies in Book of Job, and although we were looking at the friend's response in the kind of second round of conversations and how particularly it missed the whole idea of just undeserved suffering, we were also focusing on Job's response and how he laments, how he turns to God, how he brings his complaint and pain to God, how he asks God for vindication in a sense, but then how he trusts in God who is his Redeemer. And I think it's just helping people to think about in our suffering, how we speak to God, how we think about who God is in our pain and in our sorrow. Last night in our prayer meeting, we were thinking also about how we do that corporately, how we lament and sorrow for things that are happening, not just in our lives, but in the lives of others and in our nation as well.
Yeah, and then in the evening we thought about bad words. Last week we thought about good words from Proverbs, but how we use words badly sometimes. Fantastic Proverbs that speak into all sorts of subjects. One that kind of amused me was, do you see someone who speaks in haste? There is more hope for a fool than for them. And so we talked about those kind of hastily spoken words, talked about gossip, but particularly we talked about truth and lies, which I think is going to be important for the rest of the podcast. But the importance of truth and the outcome of lies in terms of the damage that it causes and the hurt and the breakup and how it pushes people apart along with gossip and creates lots of disunity. So, that's what we looked about Sunday evening.
Lovely. Probably worth saying that even though this isn't a new thing, all those sermons and stuff get recorded and go up on our YouTube channel, don't they? So if you hear us talking about something on a Sunday roundup and you want to go back and listen to one of those sermons, or you don't have to just listen to it, you can watch it. It'll be up on our YouTube channel, right?
Absolutely. Correct. It's on the website as audio and on YouTube channel as video. And if you want to watch the whole service, you can do that. If you just want to watch the sermon part, you can do that as well. There's separate
Lovely.
Recordings.
Time for news now. Give us your views. News.
Okay, well, we've had a bit of a night last night. Well, last night for us on the recording, it was the first of the presidential debates. Is that called presidential debates?
I think so.
Okay, so it was Joe Biden, Donald Trump having their first of three, I believe, discussions last night, in which they are supposed to, I suppose, go through policy differences and give the country a kind of overview of where they stand on things to help the voters understand which way they want to go. Couple of comments as introduction from me, and then we'll hear what you guys have to say about it. I want to know what you thought of it first of all. Actually, do you know what? Let's start with that. I want to know what you thought of it first of all. General impressions of the debate and the manner in which it was undertaken. Before you say anything else, what did you think of it?
I was weirdly excited that it was kind of like a boxing match that's going on through the night, and you're kind of interested to wake up in the morning and see how it turned out and who won. But I think that
so
was
you
the same.
You didn't stay up and watch it.
Yeah, I didn't stay up and watch it. No, sorry to disappoint. But I did wake up about 4 o'clock and have a little look on the news sort of sites just to see how it went. And I suppose it was, unfortunately, a bit like a boxing match that, you know, goes on through the night, because I think they ended up just trying to land punches on each other. So it wasn't a great spectacle, I don't think. And I don't think we learnt very much from it.
Same feeling for you, Mark? Or?
Yeah, no, as I just looked at it this morning, just watched some highlights, I was just saddened, actually. I just thought, these two guys are seeking, one, to be re-elected, one, or two, to be elected into what is probably the most powerful position of authority in the world. And actually, neither, I don't think, covered themselves in any glory in a way that sensed the kind of the dignity of the position that they were seeking to hold. Mm. And I just thought, gosh, you know, it's a reflection, I think, of where we are in the world, possibly at the moment. And I just thought how they weren't very presidential, if I can put it that way.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Why do you think that is? I think I want to ask a question about that, because I think sometimes we tend to characterise Donald Trump, or people tend to characterise him as stupid or unintelligent. And oftentimes I think people are just, you know, using language and hyperbole to attempt to describe the kinds of behaviours that we're seeing. But I think we can agree that the truth is that you don't rise to the highest position of power in the United States government if you are an unintelligent person, somebody who is completely uneducated, who is incompetent, who is unaccomplished, unsuccessful. That just doesn't happen. So I think the objective truth is that these guys are those things. They are intelligent. They are accomplished. They're successful in their own pursuits. They're competent. They're well-educated. So the obvious question that flows from that for me as I watched those highlights was, why do they behave to the contrary? Like, why does last night's debate more closely look like a kind of awkward, childish argument than a kind of intellectual exchange of ideas? To me, it comes across that must have been a choice, a conscious choice for them, because they're not stupid people. So what's the reason? Why do they choose to go at it that way, do you think?
Yeah, it's hard to work out whether it's something Donald Trump has sort of made more characteristic. Because if you look at some of the previous debates, they were quite heated, but they certainly weren't as rude as the last two have been, the one he did with Hillary Clinton and this one. It's hard to say whether he's influenced that or whether he's just reflecting the sort of quality of political debate generally in that. And I'm with you in that I wonder at times, sometimes I observe things and I think, I wonder if he's really intelligent or not. When you see him behave and you think, is this a performance? You know, is he genuinely misunderstanding the question or misrepresenting this or that, which appears to be the case? Or is it a whole really elaborate technique? I guess it's probably somewhere in between. But yeah, I think the sad thing, which Mark mentioned to me when we were talking about it today, was that Joe Biden sort of resorted to the similar kind of language and said, oh, come on, man, shut up. Mm-hmm. And something else about, you're a liar. And I thought, this is quite childish. And we're used to that from Donald Trump, but it was quite unusual, I think, from Joe Biden, who kind of sells himself as a sort of even-tempered sort of guy, you know, everyday kind of man.
It must be reflecting something of culture, right, of where we're at. That, I mean, in effect, Trump does what he does in order to kind of stir up his base. And there must be a sense whereby it's connecting with where people are and what they're feeling, that they feel let down by politicians and they feel let down by government. And I think, I don't know, I'm just kind of, you know, observing, but you just wonder whether actually so much has been put on the great American dream, and the great American kind of the pride that is felt in the government and the transition of power and all of these things. And actually they're beginning to feel, actually, this isn't bringing me what I think it should do. And therefore, it's a kind of, here comes a guy who kind of goes against that, opposes that. And ultimately what it's revealing, isn't it, is a culture which is founded on lots of biblical principles in one sense, that is moving away from that, but still has that veneer of that, but has lost its kind of real grip and foundation in God, is looking for a hope in a government to fix and save, and actually is finding it is no salvation. It doesn't bring the hope. It doesn't bring what you want it to do. And so therefore you have guys who are then able to kind of try and stir things up in a way that allows them to be elected, because they're promising to bring back and to win favour and make America great again, and it's connecting. And clearly Biden's kind of thinking, I need to speak into that fan base and that base in some way, and in order to do that I've got to behave like Trump rather than kind of go, which is probably a parody, but you know, the Democrat would be much more the intellectual elite, those kind of areas, and he's trying to show, I'm not one of them, I'm actually down here with you guys, I'm just coming from a different direction.
I think though, I've listened to some longer speeches with Donald Trump on the culture war stuff. Now, maybe it was written for him, but actually it was really good. You know, really good reflective stuff. He doesn't always just do knockabout. I mean, those are the things that get on the news.
Yes.
And stuff, you know, where he argues with people in press conferences. But he makes a lot of speeches, quite long speeches at times.
Yeah.
And is reflective of the culture wars that are going on, and speaks to it in quite helpful ways. I would say to think about that. That probably just lines up with the other thing that's probably just worth mentioning, is the dilemma Christians have with Trump, because basically a number of the policies he's implemented over the years of his presidency are Christian friendly, if I could put it that way.
Yeah.
They're friendly to the moral, ethical values that Christians have. Stuff in the Supreme Court with more conservative judges, stuff to do with abortion and so on, and a general sort of attitude, I suppose, about liberal
religious
values.
Freedom and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, which have been very good. So it's a dilemma for Christians to say, as a character, he's not really a Christian role model for us. In sort of behaviour, other presidents have been much better, even though they haven't been perfect. But in terms of what he does, Christians would support it. So I think they have a dilemma to say, how important are these things compared to economic policy, to character issues, towards sort of equality issues that as Christians we would support, not all equality issues, but equality issues from a Christian perspective. So I think it's really hard. It's not so difficult for us over here because we don't have one party aligned with Christian values in quite the same way, or apparently aligned with Christian values.
It is. I wouldn't want to be a pastor in the US right now. I think it's really quite difficult. You know, like, it's, you know, we're sitting here making observations, but you know, we're not on the ground there. So you know, but I think for the guys, from what we're reading and seeing, I think there is a real battle out there right now, and you see it in the racial tensions. There seems to be a lot going. It feels like there's a lot going wrong over there right now.
Yeah, for sure.
And to pastor into that must be pretty hard. And how to do that well, but the gospel brings great hope, so also great opportunity, as people are kind of, you know, disillusioned maybe and unsettled.
I bet that you thought it was nearly over, but we haven't started yet. It's just like on Sunday you thought we were done, but you still had communion left.
Okay, it's time for the main topic of today, which is conspiracy theories. And I guess, more importantly, how as Christians we weigh those, how we think about those, how we interact with those, what is our view on them. Graham, do you want to start us off by giving us a little bit of a dictionary definition of what a conspiracy theory is, maybe a couple of examples from your experience of ones you've heard of, thought about?
Yeah. The idea of conspiracy theories is kind of last century and into this one, but it's much more ancient than that really, but in terms of how we kind of use the phrase. So it's a set of people kind of gathering around an idea that something which is generally accepted to be true has some other sinister truth behind it. So for example, it might be about UFO sightings, or that the American military are somehow involved, or that they're integrated with extraterrestrial beings or whatever it is, or that they know they're real but they're not telling us. So those sort of conspiracy areas. There were things about, for example, the Twin Towers. Was it actually a demolition exercise that went wrong? Was it all staged? Was it to actually, you know, allow a war to go ahead? So this conspiracy theory is about the Twin Towers, about assassinations in the past like John F. Kennedy. And more recently, the conspiracy theories around COVID, which I'll kind of mention in a minute. But there's any that you guys particularly have come across?
Princess Diana.
Yeah. What was the theory was about that Princess one? Diana?
Was that like flower companies or something?
I can't remember. It was a whole theory. Oh, I think it was in that actually in the end it was the royal family, the Queen, had her murdered or something. It was one of the theories, wasn't it?
Yeah, because there was the driver was apparently drunk, but then there was like questions about whether he really was drunk, and so was there another cause for the crash that was in a tunnel.
In many ways, the resurrection was a big. There was a lot of conspiracy theories around there. You know, was it hallucinations? Did the disciples steal the body? Was it the Jewish authorities? Was it the Romans? You know, was he really dead? He just kind of, you know, all the they're all in one sense conspiracy theories to try and kind of talk around the truth, or to come up with other plausible ideas of what's happening because you don't quite believe the actual truth because it just seems too unbelievable.
Yeah, I think when I think about conspiracy theories, I think maybe I do think about those ones that you guys mentioned, but I think as well of people like Julian Assange from WikiLeaks, who essentially is trying to uncover truths that have been hidden from the public to do with people's conspiring to do certain things which might be harmful or even illegal. Same with Edward Snowden, right, and the NSA revelations about sort of global surveillance operations. I watched recently a film called Official Secrets, which is starring Keira Knightley. Have either of you seen that?
No.
Okay, it's a good watch.
Yes, I have.
Yeah. So it's about a Iraq war whistleblower who was in reality called Catherine Gunn, who was working for the government and leaked a memo. The British government leaked a memo that stated that the United States wanted to eavesdrop on diplomats from countries who were tasked with passing the UN resolution on the invasion of Iraq. So they were trying to influence that outcome because they wanted to invade. So to me, these things they're also conspiracy theories. They fall into that camp. Yeah. And of course, there are plenty to do with COVID-19. And I think what complicates conspiracy theories and sort of leads to my first question for you, Graham, really, is the fact that clearly throughout history, some conspiracy theories have in fact turned out to be true. There are truths behind some of them, right? So my question to start with, before we get to the fundamentals of which I think conspiracy theories talk about, which is the value of truth, my question is, if it's correct, and you perhaps agree or disagree with the idea that some conspiracy theories are true, then how should we weigh them as Christians? Also, how much weight and care should we give at all? How much should we engage at all with issues to do with world events and politics? Is that where the Christian should be operating? So let's just start there.
Yeah, well, that's a fantastic set of questions, which kind of actually lead us to all the main principles, really. I guess the more recent one, just to bring it really up to date, is a set of conspiracy theories around the current COVID pandemic. Yeah. So there are people who think that it's a conspiracy amongst drug companies. There are those who think that it was a virus invented by the Chinese authorities, those that think it might be invented by the American authorities and either accidentally or purposefully released. And there are theories to do with the vaccination. There's a particularly a Bill Gates related theory, which is basically he's cooking all this up in order to get the whole world injected with vaccines which have a computer chip in them, right, which somehow either do surveillance or somehow control people. And that has a reasonable amount of traction. You know, if you just Google that, you'll find plenty of sites that give evidence for that. People who say, well, actually, he's funding the World Health Organization and there must be something kind of going on for it and so on. And I think, as you just said, because the first sort of fundamental principle is that truth is important. It's important to God. It's important to us. That actually, because truth is important, we don't dismiss every conspiracy theory. We have to investigate it. There's an issue of priority that we'll talk about in a minute, but definitely you don't dismiss. I mean, there are some that perhaps are so evidently not true or not verifiable that they're not worth the time. But for ones that are doing the rounds with people that you know, friends you have, or that you're starting to be convinced by, I think you've got to do your research and investigate and try and understand what seems to be the plain truth about it, because truth's important.
Just into that, why do people kind of come up with... So if we agree, absolutely, truth is important. Why do people want to come up with conspiracy theories? You know, why do they abound so much around these big events?
Yeah, I mean, I think some is a scepticism about authority, and some of that's healthy to say, well, I can't just accept everything that I'm told. But some of it, I think, is unhealthy to do with a kind of rebellion against authority. Sometimes I think it's just for entertainment and amusement. And sometimes I think it's trying to sort of make sense of the world by not looking at God's revelation so much, but sort of trying to find an explanation for things that will kind of make us feel a bit better about the world.
Yeah, there's a lot of distrust, isn't there? Like, to do with politics, essentially, and there's a lot of, there's a lot of follow the money logic. Who's making money out of this? Who's winning in this equation? And do they have something to do with the problem? And again, like I agree with Graham, like a lot of them are just, like, I have to admit, I'm the kind of person who finds it fun to listen to them or to read about them. I find it entertaining. But I think there's also, a lot of it is born out of not trusting what we're being told anymore. And some of that is as a result of conspiracy theories that have turned out to be correct, I think.
Yeah.
But that then feeds into, as we think about truth is important, isn't it? Is also checking the motive of the person who's also presenting the conspiracy theory.
Oh, for sure.
Because in one sense, the theory is driven by potentially entertainment, potentially distrust, but potentially also a healthy scepticism. And so kind of weighing those things helps us to weigh, as it were, the truth of what is of the theory, but also of what is being presented.
Yeah, I mean, there's been things that have been covered up, not just that the one you mentioned from that film, Josh, but things like to do with, I think it's an anniversary recently or something, to do with the thalidomide drug that was given and caused lots of disabilities in children. And there was a cover-up to do with that, and there have been other cover-ups that have happened. So that kind of pursuit of truth is obviously a very commendable thing. Obviously, it's a hard judgment where it gets... Could I discount 100% that Bill Gates has the potential to, inject people with chips? I think it's a very low order possibility. But obviously you can never 100% discount, absolutely everything. But I think there are those that fall in the area of reasonableness. Could the drug companies potentially be incentivized to sort of stoke the fires of interest in the vaccine? Well, yeah. That's reasonable. That's much more reasonable than, is there some campaign to inject people with computer chips? So I think you have to kind of use your mind on it a bit, don't you?
Well, so, and of course, Hollywood has made lots of these things plausible in our minds. We've watched films where these things happened and we can see how it works out. And because we're mixing it with events where, odd things have happened. So you kind of put all that into the pot. It's no wonder theory comes up.
I think truth's important, as we said, but also lies are very damaging. So as we were looking at in Proverbs on Sunday night, lies and perpetuating lies and passing on lies and slandering, which is part of gossip, is actually something that's against God's truth and is extremely damaging. So, Proverbs is really good at saying this is what happens. People are all kind of broken up in relationship and hurt and so forth.
Where do you get biblically for all that?
Yeah, so we need to be really careful that we're not sort of slandering anyone. I mean, Bill Gates is not going to care whether I perpetuate a lie about him, but it's still the same principle.
He's going to sue you based on this podcast.
Well, quite possibly. Yes. I'm not suggesting it's true.
No, that's true. Look, leading into your thoughts on priority, which I think are really interesting, just this idea of truth being important then, do you think that truth is... important enough that it is it's an end in of itself, it's not a means to an end? Is the only truth we really care about the truth of the gospel? Do we care about other truths as well, and perpetuating those truths and sort of dismissing lies more generally than just the gospel? And I guess that's going to lead you to talk about the priority of these things when we talk about truth and which is important, which truth is the most important, which truth do we pursue most aggressively?
Yeah, that is another fantastic question, actually. It's really quite thought-provoking to think about that, how much truth we pursue. I think truth as it passes us by, as we're experiencing it, it's really important to pursue the truth and to avoid lies and perpetuating lies, passing on lies. I guess, apart from the gospel being most important, which we'll think about in a minute, I think sort of other truths, other things that are true or false that we want to investigate, I think it depends how much it's affecting us and the people around us. So, for example, it would be good to know who was actually the first person to arrive at America, in America, and start off that whole process that led to the debate last night. But, you know, was it Christopher Columbus? Was it someone else? Where did the Native Americans come from? Were they Vikings? Or that sort of thing? That's all interesting, but is it truth that I'm sort of compelled to investigate until I actually know what the truth is? Not really, because it's of interest and it's okay, but it's not really affecting me very much. So I think it depends how proximate it is to our experience. I don't know what you think about that, Mark.
Well, I was thinking the same, but I was thinking also the importance of truth is that Satan is the father of lies. So, you know, in one sense, you know, I have to have, it's balancing what is true and trustworthy and what am I going to stake my life on. But I don't also want to be perpetuating lies, slander, or gossip, because actually that all falls kind of in the devil's camp rather than Christ's camp. So, you know, in one sense, what do I reflect? Well, I want to be speaking as truthfully as I can be. And therefore, I'm having to base some of those things I believe to be truth, trusting other sources, because I can't run it down to the very nth. But how tightly I hold to that will depend on how trustworthy I take what it is to be. But I don't want to be purposefully perpetuating that which I think is not truth, which is false, slander, lies, those kind of things.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I think if there was a suggestion that Mark was embezzling church funds, which again I'm not saying, nor am I talking about Bill Gates, but if there was a suggestion of that, that's much more important to pursue the truth and to counteract lies than a suggestion that Donald Trump is fiddling his tax returns. You know, those are much more important and relevant and close to me. And the pursuit of truth, I think, becomes much more important because of the impact it has on other people.
Sure. OK. But what if we then, so let's take, for example, a Christian believer who might consider one of the COVID conspiracy theories to be true. OK. And they are convinced that it's the loving and right thing to do to make that as widely known as possible. Do you think that's right? Do you think, in a way, that truth is, you know, I guess the question I was asking before is all truth equal, or are some truths more, you know, more important than other truths? But what about in that scenario where that Christian believes that thing to be true and they want to share that truth because they believe it's for the benefit of the world and for the people around them? What do you think about that? How should they go about it? Should they not do that? Especially if it's a controversial thing that they're pushing, but that they believe in their heart to be true. How does that sort of work out?
Yeah. Do you want to speak first, Mark?
Well, I think into that, isn't it? There's lots of things at play. So I might believe and firmly believe that actually this theory on COVID, but actually if it has no cash value in someone else's life, whether they agree with me or not agree with me. In other words, you know, if it was truth held on a vaccine that would actually impact and may harm someone, then I think you have greater responsibility. I think otherwise there is a sense of the kind of recognizing there's going to be disagreement, there's going to be difference, not holding these things tightly. I think what happens though is we start becoming judgmental. We start looking down. Oh, I can't believe these people are taking this so seriously, because actually it's not true. It's a fabricated, you know, and I think that's where it begins to go into cause division, disunity, harm. That's where it's kind of crossed the boundary. Is it okay just to have it express my view in a conversation with others? Absolutely. If it becomes the driving thing of my life, you probably got it out of whack. You know, because why is this more important to you than sharing the gospel, which you know to be absolutely true? So I think you're kind of, those priorities are just not quite working out at that point.
If you're telling more people about the conspiracy theory than about the gospel, then
you probably got it too wrong. You've probably gone too far. You know, and what it shows is, it shows what you love more, doesn't it? It shows that you actually love more, probably at that point, to be proven as someone who's got something new. You're probably falling in that gossipy kind of idea, popularity, trying to get something, rather than concern to see people saved and the gospel. So I think it's always those balances. Is it wrong to talk about it? No, hey, here's this theory. This is interesting. You know, it's a good conversation around dinner. But if it becomes the thing that actually is so driving my life, I think you've gone too far.
Yeah, I mean, some people do it out of a genuine desire to protect people from something. And I think that's where you have to weigh it, isn't it? To say, okay, I don't think you're correct in your analysis, but I can understand why you're quite het up about this, and to respect that, you know, much more than one that has nothing on it. So, you know, let's suppose that it was around the vaccine, and the vaccine was about to be imposed on us as a country. I think it's reasonable for people to debate that and say,
absolutely,
you know, there are ethical issues to do with the origin of the vaccine and what was used to make the original material. There are conspiracy theories related to, you know, why are we all being vaccinated and is it a control thing, which I think are worth airing and trying to land. I think it's all about sort of purpose and heart, as a lot of things are, really. You know, why are you raising this conspiracy? Why are you so wound up about it? Is it because you're caring about people or because this is just a fascination for you? And I think as well, there are sometimes things that are just not true and are slanderous in some way. And sometimes we do need to push back on that, even with, you know, respect for the person. I've heard some things recently that were just not true, you know, as much as you can understand truth from reports and so on. So I think it's worth always pushing back where something's become exaggerated. And I think just on Mark's point about the priorities, the one of the places in the Bible, conspiracy gets used a few times, but it gets used in Isaiah where he says, don't call conspiracy everything that they call conspiracy. Don't fear what they fear. And it has a particular context. But the kind of overall message is that the priority for God's people is to fear God, not fear what conspiracies are going on. So I think ultimately, you know, pursuit of truth is important and it may have a relevance. But ultimately, our priority is to fear God and not to worry if all these things are going on, and not to think, you know, the Illuminati or the New World Order or just loads of sinful people are somehow going to take over the world and that's what we need to fight. Rather think, oh no, we need to fear God, because that kind of resolves all our fears. And sometimes when we get obsessed with conspiracies, it's because we're frightened and we want to protect ourselves. And I'm not saying we ignore all the conspiracies, but we do ultimately say the priority is to fear God, and then that will get us more prioritizing on the gospel, because we think, well, the way to get people to fear God and the way I fear God is by talking to people about Jesus, really.
And I think it's just, you know, on the back of that, you know, as I trust in God's purposes, it's striking that often in conspiracy theory, I'm more excited by the idea than actually is thinking about on Sunday, this whole idea of grieving and lamenting and sorrowful at what's happening. You know, whatever else, millions have lost their lives as a result of COVID. Now, one, you know, how as Christians are we reflecting that? How are we grieving that? How are we expressing the sorrow of that, rather than trying to come up with lots of ideas about why that may be, why it not be, where that number is? There are a number who have lost their life as a result of this disease, and you may want to argue how many the numbers, but actually you've then missed the point of there are still thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands who have died. You know, and actually our priority has to be much more modelling grieving for that than it is thinking about theories of why not, and all those kind of issues. And I think sometimes that's where we over, you know, but our trust in God's purposes and his plans will help us in that steering in the direction.
Yeah, and as well as grieving for that, just plain speaking the gospel to say our hope is not in the vaccine, it's not in test and trace. Ultimately, all viruses will be defeated in the new kingdom. So inviting people to the new kingdom has a bigger priority for their benefit, to love them. It has more priority than giving an explanation that might or might not be true about where this virus came from.
Yeah. Can I ask one final question?
Mm.
Go for it.
What would you say to a believer who was in contact with another Christian who was peddling quite hard a certain conspiracy theory or an idea, who was pushing that quite hard, and they thought they were being right in that, you know, that was a righteous thing to do, a good thing to do before God, But you were seeing it, and you were, from a third-party view, seeing that that was potentially damaging to the gospel, that it's divisive, that it's not actually loving people really well. How do you, in a loving and good, godly way, kind of, I want to say, rebuke or talk to that believer?
Yeah, well, get them to listen to the podcast. That'll be step one. But I think it's all to do with relationship. It's to do with lots of things. If you have a good relationship with that person, just trying to really understand and respect what they think and why they think it, to make sure we're not just dismissing it out of hand, because that's not loving, but also it has no credibility with the person either if we do that. But I think having kind of understood, if we're still convinced that it's wrong for them to perpetuate this sort of lie and it's becoming an obsession to them, I think just trying to find ways of talking around it. Some of that to use your word, rebuke them, but some of that may be just trying to divert their gaze. So not distract them in a sinister way, but just try and encourage them to think about other things rather than just saying, stop talking about this. But also, you know, find some other things to talk about with them and get them excited about those as well.
I think also asking questions, like understanding, as Graham said, but, you know, why is this so important to you? Where is God in your understanding of this? How are you taking this to God? You know, how's his word spoken into you about your concerns about this? Because what it would help do is really flush out what's really going on and why they're so wound up about it. And more than likely they're fearful or they're anxious, or actually they just become really proud. They've puffed up because they've got this new theory. And actually just helping them to see what's really going on. And then maybe there's a genuine concern and they've seen something that no one else has seen. But I think often just helping them connect with the Lord is how it kind of exposes what's going on in their hearts.
All right, another one down, another podcast in the can. Thanks for being with us for this episode of Ordinary. If you have comments, questions, anything you want to say to us, then you can email us, as always, ordinary@cchh.org.uk is the address. I don't think I've got anything particularly important or interesting to say at the end of this week's podcast, but make sure you come back next week. We'll cast a brand new pod for you to listen to next Friday. So we'll see you next time.